Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome, everybody. We're about to have a conversation with somebody who I've been listening to, and many of you have listened to his songs and him for, oh, Lord have mercy, 50 years?
52 years.
52 years.
Yeah.
That's Tom Paxton, one of the legendary songwriters and folk singers in our world. Brought to Baltimore. Walt Michaels of Common Ground on the Hill, you heard our pushing that event with and the weeks leading up to Tom Paxton being here, and he's
Thank
in the
you.
Studio as well. Good to have you here, Walt. Welcome to Baltimore, man.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to have you in the studio.
Not that far from home. I live in Alexandria now.
You live in Virginia?
Yeah.
How do you like that? Why'd you move there?
We moved down to the D.C. area because our older daughter had moved down to Bethesda, and her husband had gotten tenure at American University, and they were never going to leave, so... And we've always loved, this part of the world. So we said, let's go. So we moved down, and as soon as we moved down, our younger daughter moved down from New York. So we're all together.
Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. So we're actually neighbors.
Three grandsons. Wow, it's wonderful.
It's amazing. It is amazing. It is amazing. You know, I was thinking when I was on your way that you were coming here. That you're one of the folks still standing.
Still standing.
Still standing. Yeah. Who was at the beginning of the folk music wave that happened in the early 60s.
Yes.
And you knew them all. Dave Van Ronk,
indeed.
Mississippi John Hurt.
Dave Van Ronk was my best man when my wife and I got married.
Really?
It'll be 50 years in August.
Wow.
And Mississippi John Hurt, yeah. I'll sing you a song about him in a second.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
What did Dave Van Ronk play at your wedding?
Huh?
Did Van Ronk play at your wedding?
No.
Oh, I was going to. No, I wonder what he'd play.
I wouldn't dare let him.
Well, I can imagine that.
Yeah,
but I remember seeing you over the years when I was a younger fellow, when you were a younger fellow too.
Yes, I was
playing at Newport Folk Festival.
Yeah, I played three of them.
I saw you at the Gaslight.
Yeah,
many moons ago.
The Gaslight was someplace.
It was like the headquarters. It was like everybody played.
It was, yeah.
Everybody played there.
I was actually just back there. It's reopened now. And I was part of a NYU night recreating the village, and a bunch of us went back to the Gaslight. And I called my wife and said, there is zero nostalgia to this. It's nothing like it was.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's a bar in there now, and there never was before.
There never was before, right.
And the stage is nowhere where it was. So it was just another cellar now. I mean, but the Gaslight was, that was the university. That's where we all went to school.
Everybody played, all the singer-songwriters of the day.
Yes.
They were all in there.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it was a very different time. I mean, just before you play something, let's take us back a little bit to that time and the people in it and your kind of recollections of what it was like to kind of, you know, you started doing that when you were still in the Army, right? Taking the bus on over to New York from New Jersey?
From New Jersey. It was the end of the Beat Generation. So the coffee houses, including the Gaslight, were mostly Beat poets. And, of course, they were dropping the F-bomb. And that's why the tourists were coming from miles away to see the Beatnik poets, you know. And the folk singers were kind of to fill in between poems. And that changed very rapidly. I mean, over the summer of 60, it turned into all folk music. The crowds were enormous. I mean, it was people jammed at MacDougal Street, you know.
Right.
And the Gaslight was full, and they turned the house over every hour and a half or so. And when you were playing at the Gaslight, you played six or seven times a night, you know, three song sets. But when you think of it, it was perfect training. Six or seven times a night, you learned how to get on, what to do next, and how to get off.
Mm-hmm.
And then you did it again. How to get on, what to do next, how to get off. Great training.
And one of the things about that you do still so well, and people like Arlo Guthrie still do, and some others, it's the music, it's the songs you write and play, but it's also the stories you tell on stage.
Yeah.
A huge piece of this is the storytelling.
Oh, yeah. Well, nobody's better than Arlo. I mean, Arlo is the greatest onstage storyteller there is, you know.
I think that's probably true.
Arlo is one of my 5 or 10 favorite live performers.
Yeah.
He's a magnificent performer.
He was here at Common Ground on the Hill.
He was. His whole family was
right.
There. And Ramblin' Jack Elliott.
Right.
Same time.
Yeah, Ramblin' Jack was here too. That's right.
That's how I got any of them there. I had to.
Ramblin' Jack tried to pick up my wife.
Oh my God! Yes.
Well, I'm surprised. There you go.
She almost let herself get picked up. She liked him too.
Bob Gibson always used to say they don't call him Ramblin' Jack because he travels a lot. You know?
It's true.
Yeah.
So, but that the fact that you're still doing it. I mean, you're still playing folk music. That you never left that world.
Well, maybe I just never got the word, Mark.
You know. You didn't notice all the other stuff going on around you.
Right. Everybody's gone. What?
But not because it's I mean, some of your songs have become major hits.
Yes.
And they'll probably be played long after you go to wherever else is happening next.
Right. To the green room in the sky.
It is amazing. What do you think? Just for our listeners, because I won't remember this, so I wrote them down. I mean, Ramblin' Boy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Everybody and their mother has played that. Last Thing on My Mind, Bottle of Wine.
Right.
I mean, my God. These songs are just...
Not to mention, My Dog's Bigger Than
and
You.
And Your Dog. That's right. Right.
And the Marvelous Toy.
Right. That. Sung by all kinds of people.
Yes. God bless every one of them.
So, I mean, that's the wonderful thing about that is, I mean, A, that your music, you know that part of you, that your songwriting will live on way beyond you. But, I mean, your soul is in those songs, and it's going to keep going forever almost.
Well, I hope so. It won't matter to me.
No, I know, but you know, but probably not, unless you're hovering around somewhere.
Yeah,
who knows?
Right. Who
but
knows?
I mean, that's kind of a cool thing to think about, that you've got, you know.
It is. All I ever wanted, really, when I began, was to put something into the pool. And I guess I have, to a certain extent, and that's very satisfying.
It's also not so bad when the checks come every month to the door. Somebody sings your song.
I never turn them away.
So, and one of the things, though, you've also made this balance with your songs between the ones we've just mentioned and others that are really great ballads and folk songs, and your songs about social justice, your songs about political protest, your songs about war. I mean, they're both part of you.
Well, Mark, I come by that because I went to school on the Weavers, Pete Seeger, Woody Guthrie, and those were the songs they sang. The Weavers at Carnegie Hall is still one of the best folk music albums ever made. And on that album, they sing an Indonesian lullaby. They sing a song from the Spanish Civil War. They sing Hush, Little Baby, Don't Say a Word. They sing Kisses Sweeter Than Wine. And they sing political songs as well. They're all great songs. And folk music is one area where you can write about anything you want to write about.
Right, right.
If you're down in Nashville trying to make a living writing songs, you only write one kind of song and hope to God you can get it cut, you know. But you certainly don't, quote, waste your time writing stuff that has no chance of being cut. In folk music, I write all kinds of stuff that I know will never be recorded except perhaps by me.
But and those songs are important. I mean, you're still doing them.
Yes.
When something happens in the world, some fight for social justice and freedom, more than not, someone's going to hit you inside and you're going to write a song about it.
Yeah.
But I think that's important.
I think so. I think so.
Do you have something you want to play?
Sure. Speaking of John Hurt. This is
Speaking
a song
of yeah, John Hurt, right, right.
It was a frosty night, it was beginning to snow, and down the city streets the wind began to blow. We all came to the cellar, we all emptied the bar, to hear a little old feller I play a shiny guitar. Did you hear John Hurt?
Did you hear John Hurt?
Play the Creole bell.
Play the Creole bell.
Spanish Fandango.
Spanish Fandango.
I bet he loves so well.
Bet he loves so well.
Did you love John Hurt?
Did you love John Hurt?
Did you shake his hand?
Did you shake his hand?
Did you hear him singing his Candyman? Oh, did you hear him singing his Candyman? On a straight back chair, all the time held on. He tickled our fancy with his eye alone. And everybody passing down McDougal Street, go cock your heads and listen to the tapping feet. Did you hear John Hurt?
Did you hear John Hurt?
Play the Creole bell.
Play the Creole bell.
Spanish Fandango.
Spanish Fandango.
That he loves so well.
That he loves so well.
Did you love John Hurt?
Did you love John Hurt?
Did you shake his hand?
Did you shake his hand?
Did you hear him singing his Candyman? Did you hear him singing his Candyman? My Creole bell, I love her well. My darling baby, my Creole bell, when stars do shine, then she'll be mine. My darling baby, my Creole bell. It was a frosty night, it was beginning to snow. And down the city street, the wind began to blow. We all came to the cellar, we all emptied the bar, to hear a little old feller play a shiny guitar. Did you hear John Hurt?
Did you hear John Hurt?
Play the Creole bell.
Play the Creole bell.
Spanish Fandango.
Spanish Fandango.
That he loves so well.
That he loves so well.
Did you love John Hurt?
Did you love John Hurt?
Did you shake his hand?
Did you shake his hand?
Did you hear him singing his Candyman? Did you hear him singing his Candyman?
All right. Now, see, a lot of folks don't know who Mississippi John Hurt was.
Oh, yeah. He was a sweet man.
I mean, because he was lost for years, and then the blues revival, folk revival brought him back.
Tell you a good story.
Good.
A couple weeks ago, I played at Swallow Hill in Denver, and the head of the Denver Folk Center is a fellow named Harry Tufts, wonderful guy, and he played with his friends as the opening act in the concert. And I started the second half of the concert by singing Mississippi, but did you hear John Hurt? And I played it on John Hurt's guitar.
Whoa.
Get out. They had his guitar?
Yes. John Hurt's guitar is now part of a collection by that belonged to a now deceased folks guitar collector. And the collection is curated by Harry Tuff. He has it at the Folklore Center. And I said, Harry, bring John's guitar, and I'll do it. Well, was that...
Wow.
A once-in-a-lifetime kick or not.
What kind of guitar was it?
Yeah, I was about to ask the same question. Yeah. What is it?
Well, it's a little Guild guitar, and it's red and black on the face, which begs the story of how he came into it. He must have been playing some god-awful instrument when they found him in Avalon, Mississippi, and they brought him, this is 63, they brought him up to the Newport Festival
right here.
I got a chance to see him. And they stopped in New York on the way, and they took him to the Guitar Center, which was right next to the Folklore Center. And they said, John, pick out a guitar, any guitar you want. This is the Newport Foundation. Any guitar you want, pick it out. So he went around, he played on some guitars and everything. So he finally said, I want this one. They said, fine, it's yours. And it was far from the most expensive guitar.
He didn't buy a Martin, he didn't buy...
a little Guild guitar. And they said, after the deal was done, they got him together and said, John, if you don't mind telling us, why did you pick that particular guitar? And he said, well, he always wanted one that was in colors. And it was red and black top. And that's what sold him.
Not the sound?
No.
Not the...
Well, it was a Guild guitar, perfectly fine guitar,
right,
no problem about it.
Right.
As I could tell as I played it, but that was his criterion was he wanted color.
I love it.
A colored top.
He was a very special gentleman.
Oh,
you could just tell.
Oh, my Lord, yeah. And he also had a lot of mischief in him, too. He loved his bourbon, and he still loved the ladies. But to see him sitting on a kitchen chair on a stage in front of 18,000 people, singing the way he'd been singing for all those years and nobody listening.
Right.
And all of a sudden, 18,000 people just lost their minds.
You know? I remember his singing at Newport, that Maxwell House Coffee song of his.
Yeah. Well, it was just a couple months after Newport, he came and played at the Gaslight with us for a couple weeks. We heard him a couple times a night.
Wow.
You know, and you, of course, when you're young, you suck that up by osmosis,
Yes.
So it was about a month after that, when I was on the road for the first time with my wife, that I began. When I'd pick up the guitar, I would find myself doing this. Now, my tune, my words, but I don't think it would have come to me if it hadn't been for playing with John Hurt. Bottle of wine, fruit of the vine. When you gonna let me get sober? Let me alone, let me go home. Let me go back, start over. It's a little hotel, older than hell. Dark as the coal in the mine. Blankets are thin, I lay there in wrinkles. I got a little bottle of wine. Bottle of wine, fruit of the vine. When you gonna let me get sober? Let me alone, let me go home. Let me go back and start over. Well, the preacher will preach, teacher will teach, and a miner will dig in the mine. I ride the rods, trusting in God and hugging my bottle of wine. Bottle of wine, fruit of the vine. When you gonna let me get sober? Let me alone, let me go home. Let me go back and start over.
Man, so nice to hear you sing that.
Huh?
So nice to hear you sing that.
Thanks.
You know, I used to sing that song, and I thought you had to drink to sing it.
You didn't?
It just sort of ruined my life for a while.
Don't blame me for your problems.
Everybody sang that song.
Yeah.
So, and tell us about how you and Janice Hian began to work together again. And she was,
I've known Janice since she was 13.
Ah.
We used to do these hootenannies at the Village Gate once a month on a Sunday afternoon to raise money for Broadside Magazine.
The folk music magazine.
The folk music magazine. Right. Mimeographed, practically. I mean, it was very crudely done, but...
I still have some of them.
A lot of songs showed up there for the first time, including Blowin' in the Wind.
Right.
And
by that guy, what's his name?
So we would have these hoots, and we did them hootenanny style, which is to say everybody went out and sat down in a semicircle on the stage and stayed there. And when it was your turn, you'd get up and sing, and come back and sit down, and you get up to sing. Maybe someone would come and join you and that sort of thing. Well, Len Chandler and I were sitting close to one another, and in between us was this tiny... tiny kid from New Jersey named Janice. And she got up and she sang this song that was so full of attitude that Len and I were just leaning on each other, roaring. It was wonderful. And when she came back to sit down, I said, go back and sing another song. And we both gave her big hugs when she finished. So I've known her since then.
This is before she did Society's Child.
Yeah, just before.
Which was the song that, of course, made her. And that was...
Oh. That was her first hit. Then she was, as she says, then she was washed up. And then she had another hit with At 17.
Right.
Ups and Downs, Ups and Downs.
But Society's Child, about an interracial relationship back then.
Yeah.
When she sang that.
It
was a pretty radical revolutionary song.
It was. And she caught, if you read her book, she caught a lot of hell over it.
Yeah.
So anyhow, we've known each other a long time, respected each other a long time. And about 3 years ago, we were together somewhere, and she said, why don't we do some shows together? And I said, you think that would be good? And she said, yeah, both our audiences are compatible, no problem. So we did. We've done about 10, I think we've done a few more than 10 shows now. And it's really an adventure because it's not one half her, one half me. We take the stage together and do the whole show.
Together.
Together, with the exception in the second half, I do three songs by myself and I leave and she does three songs by herself. Everything else, we're on the stage together and singing one another's songs. And it's great fun. I mean, I really...
And you plan to do it again soon?
Yeah. We don't have anything booked for this year, but we'll do some more next year, I know.
That's fair. That's good.
Because I love it.
That's good. That's good. And, and there's some people from the past, like tragic stories, people like Phil Oakes committed suicide, wrote all those incredible songs, anti-war songs and songs about civil rights, and he was a very committed guy that way. Did you know him well?
I knew him very well, and I thought of him as a very good friend, and I was devastated. I saw him at his worst. I saw him at his best. I saw him at his worst not long before he did it. And then I was living out in East Hampton, Long Island, and I kept hearing that he was doing better. So it just destroyed me when I opened the paper and there was his picture in the obituary, and I just lost it.
I can imagine. I mean, he was just an amazing...
And his stuff holds up.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Yeah,
sad, but true, some of the stuff holds up.
I know.
But it holds up.
But his performances were so vibrant, you know. He really leaned into every song.
He did. He was a powerhouse on the stage.
Yeah.
And there were a lot more songs than you'd remember.
Yeah.
You know, I looked over his stuff again recently and went, wow, he really had a lot of songs. You know, you think of them as being, you know, Love Me, I'm a Liberal, and that was sort of it. But now there was so much stuff.
That song is still accurate.
Love Me, Love Me, Love Me. Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah, I mean, he was amazing. I mean, that's, you see, the history you have with all those people, I mean, that be there at the root of it.
Here's how unique Phil was. He told me once at the Kettle of Fish bar with a total sincerity that he wanted to be a cross between Elvis Presley and Che Guevara. He had thought it through, and that's what he wanted to do. I saw him in his gold lamé nudie suit. You know, he did some. We were at something in North Carolina, an Earth Day thing, and Phil sang some of his regular songs, and then the band played for a little bit, and he came back on stage wearing the gold lamé suit and did some Buddy Holly songs.
I've never seen him do that. That was great. I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
That must have been great.
Yeah.
So this new album you have out.
It's not new. Comedians and Angels.
Comedians and Angels.
It's about 2 or 3 years old now, and I'm planning to do another one this year.
New stuff?
Yeah, I'll do one for you.
Great.
I met you on the beach in June, a bonfire burning bright. Friend of friends I'd known for years, another summer night. You made room beside you there, your toes dug in the sand. That distant summer when I found you and you found...
That was legendary folk singer Tom Paxton, along with Walt Michael, founder and executive director of Common Ground on the Hill. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Stephanie Mavronis, and Mark Gunnery. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts for WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.
Inside, I had our summer plan. That's when you said that you were leaving that night for Ireland. I hung around the beach that week, but nothing felt the same. and trying to get started was another losing game. And why I felt so out of things, I could not understand. I only knew that you were gone, you were in Ireland. I sold my car in Providence to buy a round-trip fare. And off I flew to Ireland in hopes I'd find you there. They knew you in O'Donoghue's where you'd sung with the band. That distant summer when I found you and you found Ireland. They said you'd gone to Galway, then you'd hitched to Donegal. McGrory's up in Culloff was where you could hear it all. Arlo was on the stage when I slipped in and took your hand. That distant summer when I found you and you, we found Ireland. I fell in love with Ireland, I fell in love with you. And when you said you felt the same, well, what else could I do? Now all these years of loving you is obeying some sweet command. It's summer now, and once again we'll both find Ireland. It's summer now, and once again we'll go.